When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diolis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Football Social Daily.
Hello, welcome to Football Social Daily, the only daily Premier League podcast out there 7 days a week. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss another episode. And although it's international break, there has been some rather big news in the world of the Premier League, especially if you're a Watford fan, because Javi Gracia is gone. They have changed their management structure. So in comes Kike Sanchez-Flores. Out goes Javi Gracia. What do you think, Watford fans? We're going to be discussing that on the podcast. So let us know at The Sports Social on Twitter. Also, England, a routine 4-0 victory. But I was more interested in watching the cricket, to be honest. It was pretty boring, if you ask me, even though England won 4-0. But Harry Kane, he's really been racking up the goals in an England shirt. Michael Owen has also been chatting recently. He's been talking about his new book. We're going to be talking about him. So maybe not giving him a taste of his own medicine, but certainly discussing what he's had to say, as well as what Roy Keane has had to say about his former employers, Manchester United. So that's all coming up on Football Social Daily. I'm Niall McCorn. It's a debut today for Mark Ogden. Hello, Mark.
Hi, guys.
Alex Boardman's here.
Hey.
First time of the season. Where
yes.
Have you been?
Oh, I've been in Poland. I've been in Spain.
Adam Keyworth's here as well. Hello, Adam.
Hello, mate.
How are you feeling? You were at the cricket yesterday, weren't you?
I was at the cricket yesterday. It was a good day. It was good.
Apart from Joe Root getting parceled.
It was good, apart from the last half an hour, which was just totally depressing.
And you're feeling all right? Not too many beers and stuff?
No. I'm pretty fresh today.
I'm not. Anyway, let's crack straight on with it. Javi Gracia has been sacked by Watford 5 games into the new season, 4 of which are Premier League games and the first managerial casualty. The sack race has been won by Javi Gracia of Watford. He's been replaced by Kike Sanchez-Flores. I don't want to say we didn't see it coming, because certainly Watford have had a terrible start to the season in terms of Premier League form, Mark, but this was quite ruthless from Watford, really.
It was, yeah, because a couple of weeks ago when the story first came out, Watford are pretty keen to say, no, there's nothing happening, he's fine, you know, there's no problem at all. And that's usually a sign that you better start getting ready to get a new manager. Mm. So, but I was at the FA Cup final last season, and I mean, to lose 6-0 in the Cup final was pretty humiliating, and they've obviously not recovered from that. But the weird thing is, when Maurizio Sarri was under pressure at Chelsea last season, Gracia was being suggested as a potential replacement for Sarri, because they've been impressed by what he'd done at Watford. He's got a track record in Europe, so he's gone from being a potential next Chelsea manager to being sacked after less than a month of the season. So Watford are a club like that, the Watford do tend to get two managers. So but the surprise is bringing back the old guy who they sacked, what, 2-3 years ago?
That's 9 in 6 years for Watford.
Well, interestingly enough, in his post-match interview last week, Javi Gracia was quite smiley and quite upbeat, and he said, you know, we've got a result here. We've started to walk, now we need to learn to run. And it is a long Premier League season, Alex, isn't it? And it is a long season. We all know that.
You just wonder what... Because you wonder if they were thinking about this after the Cup final. Because they must have... To go 6-0, I mean, Watford, what? They get there twice every 30, 40 years. When were they last there? Was it early
84, I think.
84, yeah. So it must have been... That must have been really humiliating, because it was hard to watch. I watched the first 3 goals go in of that, and you were like, wow, I'm really surprised that Watford don't have a bit more spirit than this.
Yeah.
But maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just been in the air, but to bring someone back who was not particularly successful, just, something must be going on, something else.
There must be a relationship there, Keezy, between Sanchez-Flores and the sort of the management at Watford in terms of the club's owners and whatnot, because to bring him back so swiftly, in the same statement as sacking Gracia, practically, that, you know, that shows that there's obviously some sort of relationship between the two.
Yeah, there's definitely some sort of mates behind the scenes going on, because they sacked him after one season, didn't they, Sanchez-Flores? He was okay. Yeah. But I don't think, as well, from a fan's point of view, as a Watford fan, you lose a manager who I think the fans really liked and who did really well, took them to the first FA Cup final since 84. Granted, they got slapped in the final.
Yeah.
And they've the bottom of the table after four games. But to go back, that's a backward step regardless. They're not sacking the manager to bring in someone better.
No, they're not bringing a club legend back.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like somebody you left under because he went to go manage Juventus for a bit.
It's not an ex-player, or there's no real ties between Sanchez Flores and Watford. He's not.
Well, that's the weird thing. I mean, he's had two jobs since he left, Espanyol and Shanghai Shenhua. So he's not exactly been, managing Barcelona and Real Madrid. So
maybe he's come back from Shanghai and gone, look, I just made 10 million quid last year. Don't pay me. I'll do it for now. Maybe that's why.
Javi Gracia has a 45% win record in charge of Watford, which is pretty strong.
Yeah, because
in under any circumstances, Sanchez Flores had a 31% win ratio. But I just think it's typical of we've talked about this on the last podcast when I got shouted at for talking badly about Newcastle. but what do Watford expect?
I know, I like this question.
Is my question. What do they expect Javi Gracia to do? What is the job of the Watford manager? Is it to... are their ambitions? They finished mid-table.
Yeah, they've got to an FA Cup final. They were knocking on the door of the Europa League for a large part of the season, which you're talking a club like Watford, of course, a town just north of London, and it's...
problem. They are because they believe they're a London club, and that actually matters because they sell themselves as a London club because London clubs can get better players Dybala, they didn't want to sign for Man United partly because he didn't want to live in Manchester, wanted to live in London. Seriously. It's just the way it goes these days, and Watford think that A, they're a London club, which I suppose they technically are, and they could be a Wolves or a Leicester knocking on the door of the top six, but the top six is so hard to crack, and it might be cracked this year because United are so bad, but long term it's going to be so hard for a club like Watford or Leicester or Wolves to do it long term. So I suppose every club's got to look higher than they are, otherwise you become Sunderland, don't you, and you get relegated. But it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one because Watford are never going to be a top six club.
Is it unfair for me to say that Watford probably don't have the personnel that a Leicester and a Wolves have got to break into that top six? And actually probably last season, by being so close, they might have been punching above their weight slightly.
Absolutely. And I think the thing with Watford as well, without being disrespectful, which means I'm going to be disrespectful. if you're stood outside the dressing room at Wolves or at Leicester, you could probably recognise half of the players. With Watford, it's just this endless production of players that you don't recognise, you've never heard of. They do a good job, and it's like, who's he? Who's he? And it's amazing how they get results because they're a team of faceless players, apart from Troy Deeney and the more recognisable ones. But it's really hard to. That's why they're unpredictable, because they've got an endless stream of new players and different players and different tactics, different managers.
I think some of the Watford fans were saying on Twitter last night that they saw this coming in summer because of the transfer window. Craig Dawson was one of their big signings.
From West Brom, the centre-back.
Yeah, and that is not a signal of intent from the board to say we're backing you.
That was sort of mid-window as well.
Yeah, and they brought in Sarr, young winger.
Ismail
Assar. Yeah. But I thought they did well to keep hold of some of the players. I really liked Doucouré. Yeah.
I think Everton were keen on him, weren't they? And then the PSG were also.
It just goes back to the question of now Sanchez Flores is in. What's his aim? Keep him up.
Survive to the end of the season.
Four Premier League games into the season, we're talking about Kike Sanchez Flores coming into Watford and keeping them in the Premier League.
It's just bleak. It's just not very nice. I don't think not this early. Not. On the back of getting to an FA Cup final, keeping hold of the team, they still play decent football. Like for the teams in that bracket of 12 to 16, where they finished 14th last season, they're probably the best of that bunch. I just thought it's weird. What are they going to do now this season?
Yeah,
they're just in limbo again.
But that's the thing, isn't it? I always used to say this about Stoke City. I'm a Portsmouth fan, so when we were in the Premier League, for us to finish anywhere in the top 10 was just like a massive achievement for us. And then we got to an FA Cup final and everything. But I used to say the same about Stoke City. I think they always used to finish mid-table, 10th, 13th. Yeah. I think, well, what's the point? I don't want to say I'd rather be in a relegation battle, Alex, but I mean, at least there's some sort of excitement in your season when you're finishing mid-table every year.
If you've
been
going
to... I know the Premier League's the Holy Grail and everything, but it's boring watching you lose to Man City twice a season, lose to Chelsea twice a season, beat Bournemouth twice a season. It's boring.
Is it, though? Is it? I don't know if it is, because if you've not seen that for 20-odd years and then you you get to go away to City, United, Liverpool, Tottenham. There's still about six or seven of the games that you're going away to that you're like, oh, it's either go there or go to, I don't know, Chesterfield or something, wherever you would have been going 3 years, 4 years earlier. Because short of a Port Vale derby of your Stoke, yeah, who would you rather watch?
Got to FA Cup final 2011, yeah. Lost to Manchester City, and then I think they got to Europe once. Is that right?
Under Pulis.
Under Tony Pulis. So, I mean, in terms of a 10, 12-year Premier League stay, they've got really two moments to shout about, one of which was losing a cup final, one of which was going to Europe.
Well, what I sometimes find is that when teams go down, you see, obviously people are upset and you always cut to a kid crying on the last day. But then the day after, you see loads of fans tweeting, actually going, I prefer it in the Championship. I like the football better. I like the full match day experience better. It's and also, we're fighting for something. So I can see it that
way. They say that and then they can't wait to go up
exactly,
again. So it's always in limbo. We always say in the office at work, we always talk about there's a select group of teams in the Premier League who hover every season, 14th to 17th. No movement ever. And they don't ever look like they're going to go anywhere. You could even throw Brighton into it now. Newcastle. Probably not Bournemouth. That'd be unfair. Southampton.
West Ham, I always think, are kind of there at the minute.
And you just wonder whether they just need shaking. Just something to happen because they just kind of sat there.
Relegation. Aston Villa and Sunderland were the classic examples. 10 years ago, Villa and Sunderland were always 8th, 9th or 10th. And they were always never going to be relegated, never going to win anything. But they take the eye off the ball, complacency sets in, and all of a sudden they're relegated. Look at Sunderland now. They're in a
serious
problem.
Trouble.
Villa have just come back, but Sunderland, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. Watford now have gone from a team that I reckon most people would have backed for 10th. This season, somewhere around that, we're in a relegation scrap. With a team that is so much better than Brighton, Newcastle, Southampton, any of those teams, but now they're well amongst it, just because of another really silly decision.
Yeah.
It's just silly. I don't think there's anyone who's going to say Javi Gracia should have gone after four games.
Yeah, so Javi Gracia replaced at Watford by Kike Sanchez Flores. I wonder how that will pan out for the Hornets. Talking of managerial changes, who do we think is probably not next at risk of getting the chop, but certainly at some sort of risk of getting sacked? We've looked at the odds, didn't we, Mark, before the show?
Well, Pochettino's not to be sacked, but he's the shortest odds next to leave, because obviously there's a bit of discontent at Tottenham, summer transfers, etc. I'd be surprised if he walks, but you never know. He has been saying some strange things, but after that, it's Solskjaer. And you look at United's next five league games. They've got Leicester at home at the weekend, which is tough.
Then there's
West Ham away. They got battered there last season.
They're always terrible at West Ham away.
Arsenal at home.
Arsenal as well, yeah.
Newcastle away, which is tricky. And then Liverpool at home, so I don't see many wins there.
Should have beaten Crystal Palace, should have beaten Southampton, and they've dropped points in games where, when you do have a difficult run, that's when you need to win the games.
Should have beaten Wolves. You're missing penalties with 10 minutes left.
You're missing penalties at Wolves because you can't decide your penalty takers. I mean, that's down to the manager for being, I think, weak manager. You're the penalty taker, take the penalty. So Pogba misses at Wolves, and then Rashford misses against Palace because he's obviously in his head that, oh God, I've got to score this penalty because down to Solskjaer.
I can't see United deciding to sack him, though, even if they did.
Well, they won't, because he's...
He's
the board's almost safety net. The fans aren't going to turn on him that badly like they would have done with Mourinho. They're not going to be baying for blood if United lose against Arsenal or Liverpool.
They're not baying for his blood, but every time United lose now, I think
exactly.
Eyes
are on
the Glazers. Yeah.
But that's exactly what is playing into their hands, because they've got a manager there who's almost just being used as... He's almost just there because he's got
possibly
the connection with the fans. And
I think in another way, he has done some of the things he promised at the end of last season when everything turned really bad.
He said,
some of these players won't be playing for me again. Yeah. And he's done that. He just hasn't been as well backed in the transfer market.
I went off on one of the podcasts last week why are Manchester United got seven centre-backs? Seven! Chris Smalling's now gone to Roma on loan, obviously.
And not many good ones.
Seven centre-backs. Rojo's still there. Why?
Rojo plays three games a year, doesn't he, of that?
It's stupid. And then you're selling Lukaku and Sanchez, admittedly, both of which have probably... Well, Sanchez definitely has not been as good as expected. Lukaku, I think, maybe was slightly unfairly treated. That's just a personal opinion from the outside looking in.
Yes, I could agree with that.
So, you've replaced them. And he did say he's going to give the youngsters a chance. Greenwood looks a good player for a young talent. But you're putting a lot of pressure on an unreliable Rashford, an unreliable Martial. Bell, who are both quality players. They're just not consistent enough for my liking. And then you've got Greenwood. So you're replacing a guy in the Premier League in Lukaku who scored over 100 goals with a kid who's played like 15 minutes of Premier League football.
Yeah, but he didn't want to be there, did he, Lukaku, clearly? No. So then you just get... I totally agree with it. Just get rid.
I think we're going back to 12 months ago when we sat in a studio talking about United's ex-manager. I think it'll happen this season where Pochettino will eventually become United's manager.
Do you think?
It seems like it should have happened last year, and it didn't.
Well, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer went on that unbelievable run.
Yeah,
and they couldn't not give him the job after that.
Yeah, but it was just one of those things where I think United are now playing catch-up again.
You know, in many ways, that you look at it, and maybe Solskjaer's doing the dirty work for Pochettino because he's clearing a lot of people out, but he's not bringing many in. So if Pochettino leaves Tottenham because he's not happy, and if he goes to Man United, then a lot of the players he has to get rid of, they've already moved on. The only problem I can see is that they're getting players out, but they haven't brought players in. So they're walking a real tightrope between now and January of being able to keep pace with the top six. Because I think that, like you mentioned, the strikers, you know, if Rashford or Martial gets injured, for instance, they play Rochdale in the Carabao Cup in 2 weeks.
Mm.
Now, he's going to have to rest Rashford. He can't play him every game.
No.
They've got nobody to come in. They can't play the kids because they're playing the kids in the first team in the Premier League. Every week they play in the Premier League. It's the Carabao Cup team.
He will play Gomez and Greenwood for that, I think, and Chong. That'll be his front three.
But can they afford to lose that game? I think
they probably can, to be honest.
What's Rochdale? In the
Carabao Cup? Yeah, I don't think anybody's...
But it's a momentum. It's a move.
Genuinely that. But the momentum's really been hit. I totally agree.
It is the easiest trophy you can win. As a top six club in the Premier League, it's the easiest trophy you can win.
If Man United have started the season, it's the worst Premier League start for 27 years. And that was 92-93 when they actually went and won it, which isn't going to happen this time. So if you've got the worst start in the Premier League for 27 years, they lose to Rochdale in the Carabao Cup.
It's bleak.
That is not good. And they've got to go to Kazakhstan in the Europa League at some point.
I couldn't believe when that draw came out.
Yeah.
Kazakhstan, and is the other one Serbia?
Yeah.
Well, Kazakhstan's, what, 3,000 miles
away?
It's a nine-hour flight.
Yeah.
But just looking at that is just the worst possible outcome for United.
Thursday night in November, apparently it's a high of -8 and a low of -17. It's just grim.
So people will still be having a go at Pogba for wearing gloves on Twitter. Let's move on to the England game. They beat Bulgaria 4-0 in Euro 2020 qualifying. Harry Kane in amongst the goals again, as you'd expect. He's a prolific striker and he still gets plenty of stick from a lot of people. But in an England shirt, I said this to you guys before the show and I'm sticking by it now. I've never felt more confident someone taking a penalty, standing over the ball on the spot. I always think when Kane's got the ball on the spot, he's going to bury it. And he did. And that's what Harry Kane does. So 9 penalties is the record for England by Frank Lampard, most scored. And Harry Kane's on 8 penalties. What are you guys thinking about Harry Kane in terms of his value for England?
I think it's a double-edged sword. You know, I did a piece on this at the game because I went to the game yesterday and it was such an easy win. I'm struggling for an angle. And I'm thinking that Harry Kane scores a lot of goals against that kind of team. But what is England's plan B? You know, they've got... I think if you take Kane... If Kane gets injured, you've got Sancho, Sterling, Rashford, Mason Mount... You've got this potential great front line of a three, you know, like Liverpool's front three of a real fluid forward line. I think Southgate needs to have a look at that because, as you saw in the World Cup, Kane was great against Panama, against Tunisia, but when it matters against Croatia and Sweden, his legs are gone and he wasn't there. I think against the better teams, it's easy for them to deal with. So, great against the lesser teams, like, say, Bulgaria. But
he had actually a poor World Cup, despite being the top scorer. Yeah. He was really bad in all but one of the games, I think.
Didn't score in the Nations League in the summer.
He looked injured, though.
Yeah,
he
exactly.
looked injured in the World Cup. And he looked injured a lot of last season. And I think at the beginning of this season, it seems to be the first time that you're looking at him going, oh, he's running free. He looks to be moving really well again.
I watched the first half of the game yesterday with a friend who described Harry Kane as cumbersome. Which I quite like as a description. I've not heard that word used in a long time.
Cumbersome,
which if you go into the definition of it, it means slow and heavy, therefore unable to move freely, which is sort of what you just said. Harry Kane, he's got this sort of reputation for being overweight for whatever reason.
Yeah, which, I don't think that's
true. A couple of people in the pub yesterday called him fat.
What?
And I looked at him and he's filling out his English. There's a picture of him as a kid, obviously.
He's just
like
a big
chubby
lad.
Kid. He's just a stocky fella.
He's very broad. Yeah. I really like Harry Kane. Really, really like him. I do think he struggles in big games, though. Sorry, in the City game, he didn't have a single shot in that game. I think he struggles when teams are defensively quite structured and he struggles to find a way through. A lot of it will be down to the service because he is a player that thrives off
crosses and through balls and the like, but he is an incredible finisher.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it?
He's a great finisher, yeah. Finishing
is amazing. Against the Bulgarians, he's always going to score goals.
Yeah.
And that is a real quality to have. You can't not that. I'm not for 1 minute saying that it shouldn't be in the England team, because it should, but at the sharp end against the Dutch, the French, the Germans, the Italians, has he got enough? Has he got enough pace to get away from it? And I don't think he has, which is why I would at some point look at that front three of Rashford, Sterling, Sancho, because I think the pace and the movement there would be devastating. And it could, like when he was injured for Tottenham last season, they brought in, it was Dele Alli, Son, Lucas.
They looked a lot more potent with those three.
Could you argue though as well with striking nowadays, obviously a lot of it centred around having decent pace, but Harry Kane, his movement's pretty good.
I don't think he's slow.
Where to stand, his positioning's good, he's got an eye for scoring
really
a goal
strong.
So that counts for a lot as well. Just knowing where to be. I mean, you look at Timo Pukki, he's quicker than anyone gives him credit for, Timo Pukki, but just the dynamism of him being able to be in the right place at the right time, make the right runs and score goals, that's a skill in itself, because you look at Alan Shearer, was never rapid at all, but he was always there always scored.
I think the Shearer comparison is a really, really good one. But the difference, of course, when Shearer was playing, he would always be part of a two-man centre-forward team.
Him and Shola Amiobi, or him and Bellamy,
or him and Beardsley, if you're going for somebody good.
Yeah.
But if you, imagine if you were if you were playing that same system with a Harry Kane, you could transfer him and put him up front with someone like Beardsley.
Okay,
Kane would be fantastic. I think now he has to lead the line almost on his own.
Well, one up front,
as part of it. It's a three, isn't it, up front? And he would have always... Because imagine if Kane's got somebody else at the side of him so that he can just find the little bits of the gaps and play off someone, he'd be unstoppable.
Well, that's an interesting point. Who would you pair with Harry Kane if you were doing a player two up front?
With Tottenham, he's always better with Dele Alli behind him. And Dele he's had a bad 18 months, Dele Alli's. But
he's just off the pace, isn't he?
I think Mason Mount is a player that could develop into a potential number 10.
I think that's the other thing as well. The England's midfield, pointing out last night, Henderson, Rice and Barkley, is championship. Like, there's nothing exciting about that midfield.
Two holding midfielders against Bulgaria.
I think that's poor from Southgate as much as anything. And it's just dull.
We were saying this, when the team sheet came in yesterday, we were looking, thinking, you know, it dropped Kyle Walker to look at new players, so he plays Trippier, right? And then in midfield, he's got two holding midfielders, he's at home to Bulgaria. There's no James Maddison.
Which is stupid.
There's no Mason Mount, there's no Sancho.
Sancho's on the bench,
give these kids a chance. It's Bulgaria at home, at Wembley.
You're never not going to win that game.
No.
Just finishing on Harry Kane, that's 25th goal now in 40 games for England. I've said it before, I think he'll take over Rooney's record.
Yeah.
He's got the time, as long as he stays fit. Because England plays
That's the key, staying fit. That's
and England plays so many games now that you would expect him to get 30 more goals in an England shirt.
I think he's three behind Lampard, four behind Shearer. And they'll probably get them before Christmas because they've got some five easy games.
He's only 15 behind Owen.
Yeah.
But the question with him is, will you come back in 10 years and go, remember when Harry Kane broke the England record for all-time goal scorers?
Do you do it with Rooney when Rooney did it?
But I think Rooney was just a much better player in an England shirt than Harry Kane is. Just from a total outside looking in. I thought he was more of a talisman.
Yeah.
I think Kane, you kind of look at him and think, has he scored any big goals yet?
I wonder if he's going to get phased out in the next 2 years. And it sounds ridiculous because he'll always score goals, but the young players coming through have got much more pace and movement. I wonder.
And football's changing in that.
And every year, Kane gets an injury. Yeah. And, you know, they keep adding up, and he's 26 now. Middle of his, peak of his career, but 26 with three or four bad ankle injuries. Your pace gets affected, so...
This is a really, really strange question. Do you think Harry Kane needs a move from Tottenham?
Well, yes and no. Yes, because I think he needs something to motivate himself, but no, on the basis that I think he's suited to Tottenham. If he went to Madrid or Barca or Bayern Munich, I think he'd struggle.
I just think Madrid, everyone says Real Madrid, I think they're, in terms of their style as a club, I just think they're probably, they're too ruthless. I mean, look what they've been like with Gareth Bale. Gareth Bale's been treated that way because he's not a good player, because the Real Madrid fans, they just think differently to British fans. And Gareth Bale was meant to be the Ronaldo replacement, the heir to Cristiano Ronaldo, and they don't understand why Gareth Bale misses a third of the season due to injury. They can't get the Real Madrid fans, they're as good as he could score 100 goals for them in a season. If he misses a third of the season for injury, they still won't like him.
Isn't
that's
some
why.
Of that the and lack think, of speaking Spanish and the lack of trying to
there is elements to that, but from what I could ascertain from and sort of reading sort of Spanish reports is that they don't dislike Gareth Bale as a player. They just can't understand why he's never fit. And I think Harry Kane would have a similar problem going to Real Madrid.
Harry Kane would be horrifically suited to Real Madrid because he's not a star.
And if you look,
he doesn't really have anything off the pitch.
And they signed Luka Jovic, and he's only just got a game. He got like 15 minutes at the end of Villarreal game.
I always thought that Kane would end up at United.
Yeah, I just thought he would end up at United.
I don't know if now he'd be suited to the club, but
I think he likes being a big star as well. A big fish in a small pond, and Tottenham are a small pond compared to United, Real Madrid, Barcelona.
Yeah.
But if you put him at Juve, what would he? I mean, he would score every week. He's got two goals every week.
It's just whether he can be bothered. Moving. He's so comfortable at Spurs.
It's a good fit as well.
It is a good fit.
Doesn't always work out when players move, when they've got everything perfect.
It would be a hell of a gamble.
And I disagree with some of what we're saying as well with regards to England. I think he's probably the first name always on the team sheet. Because you're guaranteed a couple of goals every game.
I think at this point, with the England's games, like who's in the group at this time? We've got Czech Republic, who we play every year.
Kosovo.
Well,
Mark was telling us that it's on a Friday night, the Czech Republic game, in Prague. So
the England travelling fans won't forgive me then for saying that, but Montenegro, again, play them every year. It's got to the point now where if England don't take full points from the group, you're going,
well, England's qualification record, even under Roy Hodgson, was the best, Europe.
It's because it's so comfortable.
It always qualifies for tournaments these days without dropping. I mean, don't think Roy Hodgson lost a game in qualification for like two seasons or something.
Yesterday it was just... I mean, I'm old enough to remember when they got to the semi-finals of the World Cup in 94. It was people like Stoichkov, good players. Yeah. They've had Berbatov. And there are no Berbatovs and Stoichkovs. Now, you look at Bulgaria, they're ranked 60th in the world, which is surprisingly high for what they were, and they were rubbish. It was like watching attack versus defence, and things like the physique of the Bulgarian players, they're not the same.
No, they look tiny and slow.
Strength and conditioning.
They don't fill the kit like, you know, the England players.
Like Harry Kane.
But it's just, you can't gauge England's quality until the tournament, and that's the problem. We all get really excited because they've beaten North Macedonia and Montenegro.
Well,
and
I think one thing on that is, you say that the team news was a bit weird yesterday. What planning is that? What team? The team he put out yesterday, what is he planning for with that? It's just like saying, we'll beat these with this team, stick them out.
Well, you may as well not have picked. Let's have a look at Trippier. Called Sancho up or called any of these players
What's
up?
The point in calling Maddison up?
Yeah, exactly. He's not going to get a game.
He's arguably one of the most exciting players in the league so far this season.
Yeah. He's in my fantasy team,
and,
so I would say.
Well, there you go. And same with Mason Mount. And you're playing Bulgaria, and he goes, don't know, let's put Declan Rice and... Just pulling out of a hat, we'll go Henderson.
But again, Rice is a real young Rice player, maybe, and he's probably a good one to blood him in.
Henderson and Barkley.
It is a safe player.
I think it's the system as well, two holding midfielders, as we discussed.
Henderson and Barkley. Ah, come on.
Okay.
I know that Henderson is now he's just captained Liverpool to Champions League.
I just feel like I'm playing devil's advocate, but because it was dull. But they won 4-0. It's a qualifier. It's a serious game.
I just think if Southgate was saving the Madisons and the Sanchos for Kosovo on Tuesday night at Southampton, that's probably the worst thing you can do, because Kosovo, surprisingly, I think...
They're 15, good.
15 games unbeaten.
Yeah, 15, 16
and
games.
And there's a lot of... If Kosovo had all the players they could have, people like Shaqiri and Januzaj and Granit Xhaka, because they were obviously the whole Kosovo and Albanian diaspora, but they've got some very talented players, and I'm not suggesting they'll win it on Tuesday, but that is England's toughest game.
I just find the whole qualifying... For the Euros especially, just mind-numbingly boring. Yeah. We know that England are going to win these games. Yeah. And do you know what? They'll draw one. And everyone will go, ooh, there's an issue. Southgate, he can't do anything.
England squad depth. I've got a graphic here, Keezy. In goal, Pickford, Heaton, Pope, Gunn.
Bored.
Defenders, Maguire, Mings, Dunk, Godfrey, Stones, bored. Gomez, Keane, Tarkovsky. Fullbacks, Chilwell, Rose, Shaw, Sessegnon, De Silva on the left, on the right, Alexander-Arnold, Walker, Trippier, Wan-Bissaka, Reece James. That's the hardest.
We could actually field the full team of right-backs.
That's enough. Alexander-Arnold, Walker, Trippier, Wan-Bissaka and Reece James for Chelsea,
outrageous.
Even though he's not playing for Chelsea, is a very good young fullback. In the middle, Rice, Winks, Dyer, Chalobah, Barkley, Lingard, Grealish, Foden, Henderson, Oxlade, Chamberlain, Loftus-Cheek, Delph. We've not even got to the forwards yet. Sterling, Ali, Madison, Mount, Kane, Rashford, Wilson, Abraham, Barnes, Sancho, Hudson-Odoi, Redmond and Reece Nelson.
That's exciting. The forwards are exciting.
That's a hell of a squad.
I think like Mark said before, I really want to see Sancho, Sterling, Rashford.
Yeah, that's
just for something different, with behind them a Madison.
Yeah,
and just let them have a go at playing.
It is exciting, but I still can't get excited watching England.
That England Spain game.
I just can't.
The England Spain game was very exciting because we kind of just played with shackles off and just played attacking football.
And because there's an element of, we might not win this, but you know Bulgaria aren't going to win.
Yeah, and Sterling and Rashford in that game were just brilliant and Kane was great.
Okay, just a final question to wrap this one up before we have a quick break. Would you rather England win something or your club win something?
What's the something?
Maybe different for you as a Manchester City fan.
I do want to see...
I'd much rather see my football club win.
I do want to see England win the World Cup.
If England were playing the same day as Portsmouth...
Oh, you'd watch Portsmouth?
Portsmouth on TV. Portsmouth all day. Every day.
You'd watch your club over...
I'd probably watch Portsmouth all
day. I think a club will always come first in England. That's just the nature of the beast. But when the summer comes around, obviously everyone wants to...
Everyone forgets.
Yeah, of course.
Everyone wants to win a major tournament. Then they get there and they realise that they're not good enough. Never are.
On that morbid note, we'll take a quick break. This is Football Social Daily. Thanks for listening to the show. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss another episode. 7 days a week, we'll have Premier League updates for you throughout the week. Then at the weekend, of course, Premier League preview and review shows. No Premier League action this week because it is the international break. But still to come in the show, we'll be talking about Mark's interview with Michael Owen. Michael Owen's, of course, released a book and he's had some rather strange things to say about his former employers, Newcastle United, which has caused a bit of a Twitter war with Alan Shearer. We'll be going into depth about that. We'll also be talking about Roy Keane, another player that's been speaking to the press, one who's never likely to mince his words, Roy Keane. So we'll be talking about what he has to say, and we'll also be playing a game of Sheffield Wednesday, so don't go anywhere.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily. This is the only Premier League podcast 7 days a week. Make sure you subscribe. And also, if you've got an Amazon Alexa at home, ask it to open Sports Social, because if you support any of the 20 Premier League teams, you can get a daily update on your club, a daily news update, as well as Premier League match reports and match previews for the club you love. So just ask Alexa to open Sports Social and tell it which team you support. Anyway, this is Football Social Daily. My name's Niall. Alongside me in the studio, we've got Mark, we've got Alex, we've got Adam. We've been talking about Harry Kane and England's 4-0 victory over Bulgaria. We've been talking about Javi Gracia winning the sack race, not as the one race you don't want to win in the Premier League. He's been replaced by Kike Sanchez Flores. But one manager who was also replaced was at Newcastle United, and I'm talking getting on for 10 years ago now. I'm talking about Alan Shearer. His dream job, managing his boyhood club, Newcastle United. They got relegated under his watch, which obviously is a little bit harsh to say, because I think plenty of the damage was already done when he got relegated. But there's been a lot of talk at the moment around Michael Owen. He was there for 4 years, Michael Owen. Scored 30
four?
Goals.
Was he there for four?
Four seasons and scored...
How many games did he play?
I think 70-odd Premier League games, and he scored 30 goals. So his record...
Oh, that's not bad.
But he was never fit. And Newcastle fans felt that they didn't really get what they paid for. Anyway, Michael Owen has got a book out. So he's been talking about Newcastle fans and what he thinks of them. You actually met him the other day, Mark. Yeah. You had a chat with him. What was he like? How was he feeling? Because obviously it's all been kicking off on Twitter. So what was his sort of thoughts about the whole thing?
Well, his mood was... unrepentant. I don't particularly bothered about the criticism. I think he felt that one or two things have been taken out of context, but when you have your book serialised, obviously you can't put the whole passage in, because it'll take up too much space. So, but now he's kind of unrepentant of what he said, and the situation with Shearer, who Michael claimed that Alan Shearer felt that he didn't put his body on the line for Newcastle when he was there in that season when he got relegated, because the situation was that Newcastle needed his goals to stay up. Michael was out of contract that summer, so the suggestion is that Alan Shearer felt he was saving himself to avoid getting injured, to avoid having a problem getting a new contract somewhere else. And as we all know, he went to Man United that summer. So two big mates, two former England captains, England strikers, haven't spoken for 10 years, which was a bit of a surprise because nobody really knew it. Michael was saying that he's surprised that nobody, you know, wrote about it, because it's no secret in his world, but in the world of, you know, football... wider word of football, people didn't know. So it was quite a surprise.
Well, Michael Owen gets plenty of stick from his appearances and co-commentary and on TV as a pundit. People are always having a dig at what Michael Owen's got to say. I think, though, Alex, if there's one footballer that you know you're going to get a nibble off in Twitter, it's Alan Shearer.
Yeah.
Also, he's always going to bite anything you say. There's a guy on Twitter who called Alan Shearer a bold mug, and he blocked him. there's plenty worse things that could be called.
The thing with Owen, just to go back to Owen for a second, though, he's almost universally disliked by every fan of every club he's ever played for. Because United fans aren't particularly like him, because they see him as a Liverpool player. They also see him as someone who came who was a bit broken, a bit injured.
Same, Liverpool don't like him.
Went to United. Real Madrid, he was in a sort of weird time of Madrid's history there.
Yeah.
And he did okay for them, but again was injured a lot. And then Newcastle, we now know, they hate him. Where else has he been?
Stoke.
Didn't play.
It speaks volumes that he's played for two of the biggest clubs ever. yeah. United and Liverpool, and nobody likes him.
Three, Madrid.
Madrid. And but, even playing for Newcastle. And it takes some doing to be disliked by basically every club you've played
yeah.
for.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And Owen said, he said that Newcastle aren't a big club. They've just got a big stadium and a big fan base.
That's yeah, right. Which is kind of the definition, really. One or two of the three or four definitions of a big club.
I agree with him, finally.
Yeah, I think a big club for me is those are two parts of it, but you have to win trophies.
Yeah, history.
I haven't won a trophy since we had black and white TV. So, you know, it's been a long time.
1955 was the last time Newcastle won a trophy.
They still think that they deserve one, though, don't they?
They need one.
Sorry, I can't do this again. Did this on the last podcast.
I know, I agree with you. I think Newcastle.
Have you been to Newcastle? It's a great night. It's a great place.
Newcastle's a great place.
Since 1955, they've not won a trophy.
But they think that they should be because they're always moaning.
There has been this story over the years that when Abu Dhabi were looking to buy a football club, Newcastle was their favourite option. And I think City managed to swing the deal because of this brand new stadium and what have you. But can you imagine if Newcastle had been taken off by Abu Dhabi, how, you know, the different story that we'd have had, that Newcastle would be the old dominant force and the Geordies would be loving it. They probably wouldn't be happy because it wouldn't be the right start of football, or Kevin Keegan wasn't in charge.
Old City fans are not happy, are they? Still, still win you all the time.
Going back to Michael Owen, I'm sure he says plenty of other stuff in his bookmark. Was there anything that he was definitely sort of keen to get off his chest when you spoke to him more?
He just wanted to reiterate the fact that what he said about Shearer was, it wasn't changing his mind, and he explained that, you know, the situation whereby he actually said, look, I put my body on the line. You know, that he actually made himself available for that last game, which Newcastle didn't win and were relegated. And but like I said, he treated it with a bit of a shrug of the shoulders. It was like, well, you know, that's the truth. And if you don't like it, tough. You know, I'm not bothered what Newcastle fans think of Alan Shearer. That's the reality of it. And he is he's quite a chippy individual, Michael. He's always been like that. I've never been at
chippy. Michael Owen, is he? Well, I'm really surprised at that.
I remember being, when he scored his first goal for United, I was covering the game at the time. It was at Wigan. And he'd gone to United and they just sold Ronaldo and Tevez. So obviously it was like, well, you sold Ronaldo and Tevez, you've signed Michael Owen on a free and Antonio Valencia. So the mood is a bit down.
And start of the problems, Mark. Yeah. Pinpointed it.
He had a bit of stick and it was nothing too serious. And he scored his goal at Wigan and he's walking past us after the game, two or three reports. Like, Michael, have you got a minute? And I retold this story to him the other day and he thought it was quite funny. So he said, Michael, have you got a minute? And he walked on past three or four steps and turned and said, you can get fucked. You're always caning me. Carried on walking. So, but I like that in a player. I like a player to be, you know, bold and opinionated and give it back. I don't like these players that are just put their head down, never say anything. Now, the problem with Michael is that because he came through as a boy wonder when he was 18, 19, he never said anything until he was about 25. So people still have this image of him as Michael Owen. Wouldn't say boo to a goose, but the reality is, he's quite gobby and he's quite
Always
spiky.
Had a touch of arrogance about him, hasn't he? Like, I remember do you remember that video where him and Neville Southall scoring goals against a 14-year-old?
Yeah, well done, Michael.
Well
he's
done.
13.
He's 13, well done. Yeah. But even then, Michael Owen was a bit ruthless with the kid, like celebrating and everything. But that's him, isn't it?
He
that's
made
what
the
he's
point,
like.
And he was defending Shearer in a certain extent, saying when you're at the top level like that, you have to be quite a ruthless bastard and quite arrogant and tough and not care what people think. And I think he's right, you know. We're going to talk about Roy Keane later, and people talk about footballers nowadays. They can't take criticism in the dressing room or out of it. And I think, you know, you've got to have a thick skin, and you've got to be tough, and you've got to be ruthless and single-minded. And I think he is, and you know, I'm all for that. I'm all for footballers to come out and say, I didn't like him.
It's such a surprise, this, because he comes across on TV whenever in the last 10 years. It's just so dull. And like, not the exact opposite of opinionated.
I just don't think he's very good at being a pundit.
At talking.
Yeah. I mean, he might have a lot of personality, he just doesn't.
I think he's lost his love for the game.
I think as well.
I mean, his passion in life is not football, it's racing, it's horse racing.
Yeah, he's done a sensational job of selling his book.
I've spoke to him before.
Yeah, he has actually.
I've met Michael Owen, I've spoke to him before, and I spoke to him about football for 10 minutes, and he's just like, just wasn't really asked. And then when we started talking about horse racing, that's when he sort of lit up. And he became more sort of enthused about horse racing. I think maybe the football is you know, he was playing from 16 and he played a hell of a lot of games when he was younger, which is probably why his body did break down when he got
to his later years. He had a really bad hamstring injury playing at Leeds one night. I think he was only 18, 19, and that's the point where he says from that point on he declined starting. He wasn't even 20 because he had such pace. He had amazing pace.
Yeah, he was lightning.
He was so exciting for England. when he came through.
Him and Beckham were the superstars, weren't they? Him and Beckham that time, around that time for England. That
goal against Argentina was one of the great moments.
Should have passed his goals.
That's the cliche. You got the cliche belt.
I was waiting
earlier for someone to go, Harry Kane should have squared it to Sterling. Yeah. There's another one.
Didn't want to do it.
But I think Michael Owen, like you say, back then it was him and Beckham. And you always felt like England had more of a chance when Michael Owen was playing.
You talk about him being ruthless as well. Apparently, Shearer's never, ever mentioned this sour relationship in the last 10 years since it's happened.
Mm.
And this is the first time he's commented on it because Owen's brought it into the public eye.
Well, Owen said they used to play golf and stuff together and they were pretty good mates, and now that's sort of broken down. And I think, am I right in thinking, Mark, Owen said that, you know, he still happily speak to Alan Shearer, and it's kind of the problem lies with Shearer rather than Owen. I don't think Owen's too fussed. But
he mentioned stubbornness. He said that they were both doing a TV job at some point in the last few years, and he said, you know, I thought, I'll go and have a chat with him. I thought, nah, you know, because he's as stubborn as Shearer, so it might get resolved now, because apparently this could be quite interesting. It's the FA's, there's an anniversary coming up of something or other, and all the surviving England captains have been invited. So Shearer and Owen are going to be in the same room together on an England kind of FA junket. So are they going to be at opposite ends of the room, or are they going to actually say, you know what, it's a little bit nonsense this, how you doing, mate, fancy a beer? Well, one of them's got to make the first move. I'm not sure.
It's like a soap opera, this, trying to figure out what's going to happen. One player who used to play for Manchester United also is Roy Keane. He's been speaking to Off the Ball, our Irish friends, along with Gary Neville, in a long form interview in front of an audience. And he said some rather interesting things as well. He was laying into his former gaffer, Sir Alex Ferguson, which I think also stems from a book. Alex Ferguson said some things in his book a few years ago, and Roy Keane's never really taken to that very well. What do you make of what he's had to say? He said, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson's man management wasn't all it was cracked up to be, basically. That was the was what he was trying to say.
I think he's not so bad. I think he says both Clough and Ferguson were great man managers, but he's talking about
doing the best for Man United.
Yeah, it's about the doing the best for Man United. And then he says he's got his son Darren's playing for the team and he gets a premiership medal. He shouldn't have been anywhere near it. Then he goes to Preston, and when he gets sacked from Preston,
surprised his wife wasn't on the staff and stuff
I mean, it's all really funny, but the first thing that came out of, it's a 2-hour video that has been clipped and you can watch the full thing online if you want, but anytime Keane's talking, his timing, his comedic timing is perfect.
He's a headline hunter, isn't he? And he does it really well.
But he's just on. He seems to be honest, and he's just so relaxed, and he knows exactly what he's doing with a little wry smile. And you compare him sat on the sofa with Gary Neville, who's arguably the pick of the pundits, I suppose. Mm. He's probably the most intelligent one. He seems to make the best points. Gary Neville looks ridiculously dull in comparison. He looks like he's got no personality whatsoever. He's repeating himself every couple of sentences, because everybody in the room is just going, right, Gary, talk to Roy, shut up. We're not interested.
It was a difficult one for Gary because of his loyalty to Ferguson, isn't it? And he just didn't know what to say. And I just love the way that Roy Keane was referring to him as Ferguson.
Sure. Yeah, he kept going,
that man. There was no...
Never said so. He called him Alex Ferguson a couple of times.
Interesting, though, that if you look at Keane's managerial record and some of the thing, it's very strange that he keeps going after Ferguson.
Yeah,
but I find it very like...
Well, in a second, we'll talk about Roy Keane's management styles, because there's this infamous WhatsApp voice note which was sent by Stephen Ward, where apparently John Walters and Roy Keane got in a bit of an altercation. Harry Arter's involved as well. But before we do, why not actually listen to what Roy Keane's had to say here?
And I tell you what, I was at the club when Brian Robson left. I was at the club when Steve Bruce left. Two brilliant servants from Man United. And I didn't like the way they were treated at the end. So people talk about Ferguson's man management. Don't be kidded on by all of it either. Yeah. Don't be kidded on by all that. And Ferguson came out afterwards going, well, I always done what was best for United, Manchester United. Nonsense. His son played for the club, won a league medal, Darren. Very lucky. His brother was chief scout for Man United for a long time. Hey, listen, I'm surprised his wife wasn't involved on the staff somewhere. Darren, his son, was at Preston one time. Darren loses his job. A couple of young players on loan for Man United. Guess what happens the next day? They're pulled out of Preston. Is that what's doing the best for Man United? Do me a favour.
When did you last speak to Ferguson?
Not since then, obviously.
Not one conversation?
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, no interest in speaking to the man.
Nothing even over the past year, the ill health, made you think, maybe I'll just give him a call, maybe life's too short.
when he apologises to me and David Gill.
So, quite brutal from Roy Keane, but you wouldn't expect any less. Alex, your comedy's your thing. You've been around the scene for years and you're just a veteran in it. That, to me, sounded like a bit like a sort of a night with Roy Keane. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was billed pretty well. I got to do the warm-up act for an evening with Eric Cantona. But there was about five or six shows of that. And Cantona was also someone. And I think what he's got in common with Keane, when you're holding an audience of two, and the one that played him, there were 3,000 people there hanging on his every word, on Cantona's every word. Mm. And it was the same in this with Keane. But there's just no bullshit from either one of them. They're actually so rare in football or in sport, or even in life, to be honest, that they would just say what they are thinking. So I think that's the main appeal of them.
I think what I suppose, I guess what I was trying to get at was, is there an element of theatre from Roy
Keane? Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
He's a bit of a persona that goes
Of course,
going
of course. And the way he looks and some of the nodding, he's giggling and he's smiling with his eyes.
Smirking.
Because he says stuff, and like, even when he says no there, he's like, no. But then you see him like look away and he knows exactly what he's doing.
I often don't think he means a lot of what he says either.
I think he plays up to it.
He's playing up to it. He's really hamming it up, these opinions. People say he's quite emotional, but I always find him quite emotionless. I find him that he's so insensitive that I just find him to be like almost just stony.
Do you not have any Irish relatives though that are just exactly like this? This is like everybody's Irish granddad who just goes like whatever he thinks,
not
just says
to him
it
until he apologises.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't mind that he speaks his mind and he's very open, almost like it's quite admirable how open he is. I just find that sometimes he pushes it so far, you just think, what are you doing here other than looking for headlines?
There are
You're
two
looking
sides
for quotes.
To Roy Keane. I'm going to tell you a story now, which is it's a little bit of a sad story, but it's one that I was told by somebody who knew the other guy in the story about this. This is, so when Roy Keane was managing Ipswich, Gary Ablett was one of the coaches who used to play for
Liverpool. Yeah, I remember him, yeah.
Now, Gary Ablett at the time, he was diagnosed with cancer, and obviously this couldn't work, and Gary returned to Liverpool. And I was told that every week, Roy would, after training on a Tuesday or Wednesday, would drive to Liverpool from Ipswich to spend an hour or two with Gary Ablett and then drive back just to kind of... So there was a personal touch there, which a lot of people wouldn't do. Now, it's one of those stories that you don't really hear about. But so this kind of hard man, you know, don't care attitude that he projects there, that is part of him. But there is also this kind of, this more human side to Roy Keane, which he probably doesn't want out there. But that's the reality, that he has actually got a caring side somewhere underneath that skin.
Those are the sorts of stories that should kind of be told, because if you see what he said about John Walters, you think, why do that? There's no need for him to be like, I quite admire the whole Ferguson stuff and him not backing down because he's not been apologised to. But to say some of the things that he said about Walters especially, it's a bit like, what's the point? You've gone from being hard and opinionated to just being quite nasty. And that's the bit I don't get with Keane, that sometimes he oversteps the mark and just thinks, oh, well, I'm just saying what I think.
Talking about his management style, of course, Mark mentioned his time at Ipswich. He was also at Sunderland. He also, most recently, was the assistant manager for the Republic of Ireland national team, along with Martin O'Neill. And there is an interesting WhatsApp voice message, which was recorded by Stephen Ward, the Republic of Ireland international, which is what you were referring to, right, Adam? And it involves also Harry Arter and John Walters, the former Stoke City and Burnley striker. So have a listen to this, lads. This is what Stephen Ward's had to say about an altercation between Roy Keane with Harry Arter and John Walters.
They flew out of France, and apparently Johnny just texts Roy and said, listen, Roy, I'm in room, whatever. If you want to come up, you've obviously got, you know, something on your mind that, you know, pisses you off about me. Do you want to come up? Because it's causing tension in the squad. Let's talk it out. And apparently Roy just wrote back and went, nah, I'm just here to help players and, you know, people like you. Just stay out of each other's way. You don't need to reply to this message. And that was that. And then they got back from France and Harry felt his quad in training again, so he wasn't training. And apparently he was getting a bit of treatment in the treatment room, and Roy walked in and he was like, when are you going to train, you fucking prick? And Harry was like, what? And he was like, fucking any chance you train? And he explained the situation again, and Roy was just going off, going, you're a fucking prick. You know, you're a cunt, you don't even care, you don't want to train. And Harry was just going, Roy, I'm not speaking to you like this, like, just you know, I'm not listening to you. You know, you're not the manager, so, you know, you can't say anything to me. Apparently Roy was just going mad, getting, like, fucking worse and worse, and Harry just got up off the treatment bed and walked back to his room, and as he was walking back to his room, Roy was just shouting down the corridor, "You're a fucking prick. You're a c**t you've been all your life." And that was it, really, lads. Didn't come to blows, but basically Roy just losing his head.
Wow.
That is an anecdote, and whether it happened that way, we'll never know.
I presume it did.
I presume it did.
It's just like a strange thing for Stephen Ward to lie about, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but
it would be. Yeah.
So what happened was that WhatsApp message was just relaying something that had happened. He was obviously talking to a few mates about that. And I think the situation with him and Walters, that was his sort of take on the Harry Arter situation. But with him and John Walters, I think John Walters was getting equally sort of scrutinised by Keane for not being ever fit. And then I think John Walters actually, they had a bit of a scrap in the training ground.
Yeah, it seems to be. So when Keane is interviewed and he's on stage, he's talking about, he's a bit more specific, saying the problem is with Arter and with Walters. It's not that they're not training, it's that they're coming in and refusing to train with the group, and they're just saying, "I'm doing my program today. I'm on a program from my physio." And Keane sort of suggests, well, if you're fit enough to do that, why, if you can like do weights and you can do a load of squats with like 40, 50 kilo weights, whatever they're doing, why can you not come and run about and kick a ball with us and actually train properly and be part of the team? So I think this seemed to have festered over quite a few times the Irish squad had met up, and then Keane being Keane just exploded.
When I said about him being insensitive, I think that's what it is. I don't know whether he's being mean or he just doesn't know that he's being so insensitive about things, like when he said about Walters crying on TV. Why didn't he just lie low? It's a bit like, you don't...
I don't know,
That's just Roy Keane. I'm not defending him by any means, but that's just Roy Keane's character. And I think if people don't match up to his impossibly high standards... There's a story about Mark Bosnich, which I think Bosnich has told in the fast... So Bosnich signed for United after the treble, what, 99? And he turned up late for training his first day, 10 minutes late. And Bosnich says, "Oh, the traffic's ridiculous." And Keane was like, "Well, why don't you drive down yesterday and find that your route? And why don't you do a dry run? You know, where's your preparation?" And that... Most people would, you know, if you're starting your job on a Monday, would you do a dry run on a Sunday? Probably not. But that's Roy Keane's attitude.
I probably would. if it was an 80 grand a week job, I probably would.
I think it boils down to, as well, I mean, there's a saying that, you know, Gary Neville doesn't have many friends in the game. I don't think Roy Keane has many friends in the game, but I don't think he cares about that.
No, I don't.
I mean, I wonder how many teammates genuinely liked spending time with Roy Keane.
Well, Lee Sharp was a massive friend of Keane's, I think, when they were going out in this.
You know, Roy Keane, his job was to get the job done for United.
Yeah,
that was his job. And I don't think he let anything else get in the way of that, which I guess is what he's trying
during to do. This interview again, though, Keane he talks about stopping drinking when I think he's about 26, 27, and he used to go out after every game, and then suddenly he realises he can't do that anymore, and he just stops and turns into this machine.
Is that the cut-off point?
Obsessed with his body fat. That's where you lose a lot of your friends. If all your mates are going out...
He didn't have a great relationship with Jason McAteer, who was, at the time, a big player for Ireland, but he was also part of the so-called Spice Boys at Liverpool.
Yeah,
I think Keane would have hated that Liverpool environment. Yeah. Absolutely hated it, the white suits, the going out, the Lloyd magazine.
He mentions that. And also he kicked off, I seem to remember... about Jack Charlton, and they're all like going to do the Harry Ramsden's chippy.
Yeah.
You have to eat these massive fish and chips, and he's going, "This is the day before we fly out to go to the World Cup.
We've not even spoken about Saipan yet and the whole McCann.
The balls
and the pitches. So
he's certainly got
a trigger point put that way.
It's
a great interview, and as Adam says, he is a character, and I do think he does brighten up the game. Although what he says might not be to everyone's taste. Anyone who doesn't think that managers and staff are going around calling players pricks and stuff, I mean, it happens all the time.
I've
seen fights on the training ground all the time. You've got 25 guys in the squad. They're not all going to get on. And there's going to be scraps. No. There's going to be arguments.
He grew up with Clough and Ferguson, where he's two sort of big influences as a manager. So he would just picked all that up off them as well.
I did like what he said about Brian Clough punched him. He said, Brian Clough punched me in the face once, but I still thought he was a good manager. So we'll see if any further Roy Keane comments make it out into the media. I'm sure we'll be talking about them on Premier League Daily. But we have... reached the conclusion of the show. But before the show ends, we always like to do something. Alex, you love this game.
I love this. He's great.
He loves it. Sheffield Wednesday. It's our game for debutants on Football Social Daily. Keezy, you've been through the experience.
I still think I got stiffed with this. I think I got stiffed with it. Because we'll see how this goes.
So this is how the game works. It's Sheffield Wednesday. So Mark Ogden is a debutant today on the show. You've got 30 seconds, Mark. The timer starts I give you a letter of the alphabet, and you need to name as many Premier League players, past or present, whose surname begins with that letter.
Okay.
You've only got 30 seconds. It is against the clock. It sounds dead easy.
What's the record?
The record's 7, I think.
Yeah. 7?
Doesn't sound like a lot in 30 seconds. I got but stiff. It is. What do you mean you got stiff?
I got given the letter Y.
No, yeah. Don't give me X.
Yeah. Well, X isn't going to happen. It's definitely not going to be X. Okay, Mark Ogden, Football Social Daily. This is Sheffield Wednesday. You've got 30 seconds. Many Premier League players as you can name, past or present, beginning with the letter F.
Fabinho.
Yes.
Fred.
Yep.
Jesus.
F. He's gone.
Fairclough.
Yeah, okay.
Franson. Pepper Bolton. Jesus. Leroy Fur.
Wow. Not bad.
F.
Oh, time's ticking.
Ferguson.
Yeah.
Darren Ferguson. Wow. Duncan Ferguson.
Oh,
Fletcher.
Well, the timer ran out and you were on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I got 6.
6 also.
6. Yeah. That's a very solid effort. When you started going down the Brazilian route, what have I done? Fernandinho didn't get in there.
I can't believe you went to Fabinho and didn't go Firmino straight away.
Where did Leroy Fair come from?
Yeah.
That's why we love this game. Franson. 6 is pretty good. And you got quite a few after the final whistle.
Yeah, there was another.
Well.
Although he did.
Time. There you go.
You didn't get Ferguson's. Three Fergusons, did you?
Yeah. I should have outlined. You can't have all the Fergusons or all the Smiths if you ever have the letter S. Gents, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming in. Thanks to Mark Ogden. Where can we find you on Twitter, Mark, by the way?
At Mark Ogden _. Don't abuse me like everybody else does. Just give me a bit of love.
His love was Sheffield Wednesday legend. Sheffield Wednesday legend now, isn't he, Mark? Thank you very much, Alex.
Yeah.
Hopefully see you again soon, mate.
I've been away and working, but I'm back.
Thank you very much, Adam Keywer. Thank you for listening at home. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss another episode. If you're listening on iTunes, make sure you leave us a nice little review as well. And if you have an Amazon Alexa smart speaker, just ask Alexa to open Sports Social and play you the latest update for your team. Because if you support any of the 20 Premier League clubs, we'll have a daily news update there for you, as well as Premier League match previews and match reports as well. But that's it for now. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.